This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Nabil Biagio, and here's what's coming up.
Because of crisis, you have an entire generation who basically doesn't have access to basic services, who doesn't have access to the minimum of food.
That's Charles Bernie-Mullen, head of the regional office for West and Central Africa for the Office of the Humanitarian Affairs, on how the Sahel crisis is getting worse. This and more coming up on African News Tonight. As you just heard, Queen Elizabeth died today after 70 years on the throne. Buckingham Palace officials had expressed concern for the 96-year-old queen after a medical evaluation yesterday. The BBC reported that Prince Charles, her heir to the throne, and other members of the royal family were summoned to be by her side at her residence at Balmoral Castle in Scotland. The Queen's husband, Prince Philip, died at the age of 99 in April 2021, 2 years after he retired from his royal duties. For more on the situation in the UK, I am joined live from London by Henry Ritual. Welcome to the program, Henry.
Good to be with you.
Henry, I understand it's a very sad day for people in your country, and many around the world are following events in the UK. How was the announcement of the passing of Queen Elizabeth II made, and how has it been received?
The announcement of Queen Elizabeth's passing was made within the last 30 minutes. A statement was given by Buckingham Palace. It simply said the Queen died peacefully at Balmoral this afternoon. That's the Queen's residence in Scotland. It said the King and the Queen consort, so that's now King Charles, of course, and his wife Camilla, will remain at Balmoral this evening and will return to London tomorrow. The news of the Queen's sudden turn of ill health came at about midday British time today, with another simple statement from the palace saying that doctors were concerned. That prompted all four of her children to travel immediately to Balmoral, where they stayed by her bedside, we understand. And also Prince William and Prince Harry, her grandsons, have made their way to Balmoral as well. The country obviously held its breath this afternoon, prepared for the worst news. There were mourners and well-wishers gathering outside Balmoral, outside Buckingham Palace, and outside Windsor Castle as well, all royal residences in Britain. There are now scenes of people in tears outside those places, hugging each other, exchanging comforts, and mourning the death of Queen Elizabeth, who has passed away aged 96 after 70 years on the British throne.
Yes, Henry, you said the country was sort of prepared for the bad news. What did her doctors and family say the cause of the death was at 96?
We don't have further details on the cause of death. We know that the Queen has been reining back in her engagements in recent days. She was unable to travel to London, as is the custom, to appoint the new Prime Minister, Liz Truss, on Tuesday. Instead, Liz Truss travelled to Balmoral in Scotland to be appointed as Prime Minister. She has been in Balmoral for several months over the summer because we know she has mobility problems, although the sudden ill health that she seems to have suffered today was perhaps unrelated to that. The announcement from the palace doctors came suddenly without warning. So we will discover, I should think, tomorrow when further details emerge of the exact cause of the monarch's death, with further statements from the palace. And, of course, there are many procedures that have been prepared for and put in place for what comes next in the coming days and weeks.
Queen Elizabeth II, of course, had a larger-than-life place all over the world, and especially in Britain. How will British people remember her?
She is held in great regard and respect among British people, no matter what your political persuasion, I think. polls show that roughly 60% of people in this country approve of the monarchy, so it's not universal. But as a person, as a monarch, as a head of state, and as somebody who has stood above the melee, really, of British politics and the chaos and tumult of seven decades of power, she is greatly respected. She has represented Britain and its values abroad. She has met friends and foes of Britain, from Nelson Mandela to President Putin, from Xi Jinping to President Reagan. She has seen 14 US presidents come and go, and she has herself appointed 15 British prime ministers. So it gives you an idea of her longevity and the regard with which she's held and the sheer history that her passing represents. And on a personal level and on a more historical level, this is a huge moment for Britain and for the world. But for Britain itself and the British people, it represents the end of a particular era. She was somebody who the country turned to in crisis, whether that be terrorist attacks or whether it be the coronavirus pandemic. She was a constant. She was hugely respected, and it's going to take very much emotional outpouring from the British people, mourning and grief over the coming days and weeks. But I think you will see the functions of state, the ceremony, take over the funeral plans and the coronation plans for Charles. Will direct the country, will direct the royal family, and will give some structure to what will be very difficult days
ahead. I was just getting into that part. What is going to happen in terms of succession? As I understand, Prince Charles is next in line.
Yes, he automatically has become king on the death of Queen Elizabeth II. We don't know whether he will choose the title. We assume he will choose the title King Charles, but his full name is Charles Philip Arthur George. So he could choose any of those four names as his title. His wife, Camilla, we don't know whether she will be referred to as Queen yet. We understand she may instead be referred to as consort. And the plans for succession and coronation are well published, I think, although, of course, flexible. We understand that tomorrow there will be a meeting of what's called the Accession Council, that's senior government figures along with members of the royal family. And then the next steps will be set out in the coming days. We understand that the Queen's coffin will be brought down from Balmoral to Buckingham Palace, and the funeral is likely to take place in around 10 days' time. Of course, figures and heads of state from around the world will be invited. And then becomes the process of coronation for King Charles after that has taken place.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Henry Ritual, for being with us. Of course, we'll continue following developments in your country. Thank you for being with us. Kweku Nwama, a professor at the School of International Service at the American University here in Washington, is on the phone to talk with us about the Queen's relationship with Africa. Thank you for joining us, Professor.
Thanks for having me.
As you heard, we just learned this hour that Queen Elizabeth II passed away. What is going to be the impact of her death on the African continent?
Well, I think for Africa, this is a moment that we have to do some stock taking. The Queen has been very important in the relationship between the declining empire and the emerging independent states of Africa. And she helped establish the Commonwealth, which still plays a major role in Africa. And we must also remember that she's head of the Anglican Church, and a lot of Africans are members of that church as well. So as we mourn her passing, this is a moment for us to reflect on her legacy and, more importantly, the relationship, the role that she played in helping to navigate somewhat turbulent relationships in the early years and to keep African states within the Commonwealth family. And also the big lesson here is that there's dignity in public service. Her life illustrates that principle. And I think Africans need to reflect on that and to learn from that.
So she will be remembered rather fondly in many ways in Africa. And what were some of the highlights in UK-Africa relations during the reign of Queen Elizabeth II?
So one of the early difficult patches was when African states became independent and they were leaning left. That important trip that she took to Ghana, for example, 1961, that became a very important trip, keeping Nkrumah within the Commonwealth family, and then that became one of the things that newly independent African states followed. But also, helping to set up a Commonwealth, it provided a forum where Africans could talk about issues that were important to them. During the Thatcher years, relationship between Africa and Britain was rocky because the Thatcher administration was supporting apartheid South Africa, which the Queen, because she didn't have a lot of authority in terms of British foreign policy, she couldn't directly interfere with that. But by creating a forum where Africans could still interact and engage and voice their discontent over the policy, it put pressure on the Thatcher administration, and that became part of how governance was done, how foreign policy was done. So she provided a very important moral voice in our engagement with Britain, and it helped to nudge the administration closer to where we were and where we wanted to go.
And given all that legacy, what is going to happen with her successor, Prince Charles? What is going to be different?
Well, I think Prince Charles has his own ideas, and he has his worked on things that are important to him that should be important to Africans as well. So, for example, one of the things that Prince Charles works on is environmental activism, and this is something that Africa needs to keep in mind. And so if he comes in and he's a champion for human rights, that benefits Africa. If he's a champion for the environment, that benefits Africa. If he's a champion for fairness in how Africa is treated in international relations, particularly relations with Britain, Britain is also going through a transition of its own, having recently left the European Union. That new relationship will be shaped by the guiding hand of Charles. He doesn't have a lot of authority in terms of shaping the foreign policy of the country, but he's going to be the head of the Commonwealth. And that's a very, very powerful position in terms of a moral direction and a moral voice that he's going to be able to bring. And I think that benefits Africans, and Africans will probably look forward to working with him. He's not an unknown quantity. He's been around for a while, so we know what he stands for. And I think that African leaders will welcome him and will hope that he listens to Africans and helps us in our quest for fairness and also sustainability.
Professor Nwama, thank you very much for your insights and for being with us on African News tonight.
Thank you for having me.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says former Senegalese minister and UN diplomat Abdullah Bathily will be the new UN envoy to Libya after the Security Council gave its approval, ending a 9-month search amid increasing chaos in the oil-rich North African nation. VOA senior analyst Mohamed Shenawi discussed with Wolfgang Putsai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, how that would diffuse rising tension and pave the way for renegotiating a political solution in Libya.
I would say Bathily appears very well suited for the role as a UN special representative because of his previous UN activities and of his knowledge of the conflict in Libya, as well as UNSMIL internal affairs. He was last year participating in a UN internal review about UNSMIL. He has also the major advantage of being the first UN Special Representative since 2015, who is not driven by the initiatives of his predecessor, and therefore he is able to develop his own plan to stabilize Libya, and this is desperately needed. But he will have a hard time gaining widespread acceptance for his person in Libya due to reservations among many Libyans, including, unfortunately, some racist ones. One must also remember that although Prime Minister Dabeiba now stated that he will fully support him, he tried before to prevent Patiyi's appointment.
The U.S. State Department confirmed in a statement the United States' full support for the UN envoy, calling on the international community to work closely with him. The statement called on all parties concerned with Libyan crisis to work in good faith to reach an agreement on a constitutional framework and a specific timetable for elections. How important is that U.S. State Department statement?
Let me stress, Patiyi was supported by all the members of the UN Security Council. But this U.S. statement is important, in particular important in two ways. It makes clear to the Libyans, and there was already some doubt about this, that the United States still has the intention to contribute to the stabilization of Libya, albeit in a limited way without own major initiatives. But it is key to any kind of stabilization efforts that the United States are on board. Furthermore, this statement should help to rally international support for the new UN Special Representative among those countries with direct interests in Libya. I would say it would be very important that Patiyi gets very soon several very senior level meetings with key politicians from key countries to strengthen his reputation also in the eyes of the Libyans. It would be really great if he could show up for some meetings in Cairo, Ankara, Algiers, Washington, and some Arab and European capitals before he's really taking over in Libya.
The special envoy of the Italian foreign minister to Libya, Nicola Orlando, expressed his aspiration to work closely with Bathily and the UNSMEL to achieve unity, peace, and stability in Libya through national elections as soon as possible. Could the Italian cooperation help Libyan rivals parties cooperate with the new envoy?
Nicola Orlando's statement is certainly on spot, and this is certainly better than the other way around. But the doubt, it can help in a decisive way. The incentives the Italians and also most of the other European countries have for the Libyans are very limited. Let me make clear one important thing. The solution for the current mess in Libya must come from within Libya. Many Libyans and also several international analysts are really blaming the international community, including especially the Europeans, for everything going wrong in Libya. But the full implementation of the Geneva ceasefire agreement, a constitutional framework for the elections, an election law, a roadmap to the elections, all this must be agreed in between the Libyan actors and not between Paris and Rome or Cairo and Ankara.
That was Wolfgang Puzai, former Austria military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Eshenawi. Malawi's president has ordered the Reserve Bank of Malawi to prioritize buying fuel in any currency, in any foreign currency the country can secure to deal with the fuel shortage. The shortage has forced Malawi's drivers to wait in line for hours or to buy fuel smuggled in from neighboring Mozambique. Lamek Messina reports from Blantyre in Malawi.
The scarcity of fuel in Malawi is largely attributed to a shortage of foreign exchange, especially US dollars. The shortage has forced Malawi's drivers to wait hours in line, sometimes overnight, or purchase fuel illegally smuggled from Mozambique. The problem is more rampant in central and northern Malawi, where many pump stations have run dry for weeks. Clement Chinoko is a journalist working for the Daily Nation newspaper in the capital, Lilongwe, where fuel remains in short supply.
It has been a hassle. The last time I fueled, I had to wait for about 3 hours in Lilongwe city center. This is the main business area of the capital city. That was 3 days ago, and today I am back on the queue as well, hoping that I'm going to get serviced.
Another motorist, Matilda Chiwambo from Blanta, says she had to abandon her car on her way to northern Malawi.
I was supposed to be in a meeting in Nzuzu yesterday, that's Wednesday. But until now, I'm in Salima. I'm stuck because there is no fuel. I'm trying to board a public bus, but I've also noted that the bus fare have increased. So the situation is just so, so frustrating. I'm so angry right now.
Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera said Wednesday the government is taking steps to improve the fuel supply.
I know that the current shortage of fuel is adversely affecting manufacturing, businesses, work, and domestic life. And I want to assure you that we are seized of this matter to ensure that there is product in the service stations in the short term while we work on the long-term forex issues that are at the root of this problem.
Malawi obtains most of its foreign exchange earnings from tobacco. However, statistics from the Auction Holdings Limited show that this year tobacco crop raked in $182 million compared to $197 million last year, a decrease of 7.7%. Fuel company Petroleum Importers Limited told reporters this week that it is struggling to bring in fuel because it lacks the $22 million in foreign currency required each month. President Chakwera said the government is working with the banks to acquire the needed funds.
We have therefore already secured $28 million from local banks for this purpose, and we are in pursuit of another $50 million facility for the same. On top of instructions the Reserve Bank has received to prioritize fuel procurement in the allocation of any forex we secure.
The president said imports have resumed and the country is tapping its reserves.
So we speak, we have over 6 million liters being brought into the country, while at the same time, we have doubled the daily distribution of the product we already have in our reserves to ease the burden.
Motorists like Chinoko and Chiwambo hope the government can find a long-term solution, like increasing export base, to curb the shortage of foreign exchange. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
The French news agency AFP reports that prosecutors in Tunisia are investigating the fatal shooting of a young man, a customs officer, Wednesday. The wire service says 23-year-old Mohsin Zayani died during a raid on a car suspected of carrying contraband cigarettes. Officials say a patrol fired warning shots into the air and tires after the smugglers threw project dials at the officers. They say one of the officers was badly wounded in the head. AFP notes that the incident comes amid rising tensions over high inflation, youth unemployment, and a shortage of basic goods. It also follows a power grab by President Kais Saied, who critics claim has used authoritarian and repressive tactics similar to autocrat Zine al-Abidine bin Ali. His overthrow in 2011 led to the revolution that inspired the Arab Spring across many Arab states in the Middle East. The revolution began when a struggling vegetable vendor set himself on fire after a local official confiscated his card and humiliated him in public. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Thank you again for tuning in and for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get